This is a Triple J podcast.
Hey, it's Pip and D with you, and I guess Happy New Year.
Happy New Year!
Oh my God, how exciting.
Woo!
Look, we've been rolling out a few episodes over the break, just in case you missed them, and we'll be back with you really soon. But this episode in particular, I think, is a really important ep. A lot of you have DM'd us before asking about, you know, the process of seeing a psych, how going to therapy actually works. So yeah, I think this is an ep that you might enjoy.
Especially right now, New Year plans, you're going to be trying to get yourself out of that 3-day hangover and you're like, let's turn my life around. Let's 100%. Go to therapy.
Maybe you spent heaps of time with your family. Maybe you got back with an ex and you regret it. So yeah, this episode will hopefully be able to help you out.
The process of therapy is it's the ups and downs. It's about experiencing them with the person and working through it with that safe and secure therapeutic alliance.
We talk a lot about therapy on The Hookup, whether it's, you know, a sex therapist giving advice about how you can work through shame or issues you're dealing with, like we did a few episodes ago, or maybe it's a psych encouraging you to unpack your attachment issues from childhood, which is also something we talk about a lot on The Hookup. But if you've never seen a psychologist or gone to therapy before, it can definitely feel overwhelming and intimidating. And you might not know where to even start or even want to start the whole process because it just seems so intense. I think a lot of people can really find that they might know or have like a gut feeling that they want to unpack a few things, but the whole process just seems so huge and so, yeah, like I said, overwhelming. But you probably have heard through the show as well that so many of you have told us that working through things with a professional has completely changed your lives. So I thought I'd do a whole episode, which is like a little bit of an everything you need to know if you're keen to see a psychologist or a therapist for the first time and you want to know how to go about it and who might be the best fit for you or what therapy might be the best fit for you. So here to do that with me is friend of the show, Dr. Jared White, who is a clinical psychologist who runs a private practice Beyond the Therapy Room in Prahran in Melbourne. Jared, thank you so much for jumping on The Hookup.
Thanks for having me.
Firstly, I do just want to call out that, you know, everyone's going to have different life experiences that might bring them to a place where they want to start therapy for the first time. But maybe we can talk through some of those common experiences and figure out what might be the best approach or the best therapy for those experiences. So I don't know, maybe you are someone who's noticed patterns in your life that you want to unpack. Maybe you're avoidant and you want to figure out why. Maybe you've got childhood stuff. Maybe you're depressed or you have anxiety, mental health issues. Maybe you have a key event that you want to work through. Maybe there's something coming up, family issues, a big change. What kind of therapies would be the best for some of these experiences?
Okay, well, there's so many things in that. I'm just having to think of those, the list there. You've got noticing patterns in your life and in yourself. You've got, it sounds things like grief or environmental stresses and triggers. Let's, because there's so many things in that, let's just think about maybe the different types of therapy you can go into from a very general perspective. When we're talking about patterns, I mean, these are things that repeat over and over again that you've probably had an awakening to at some point and you've gone, oh fuck, like this happened again, Jesus, I've seen that before. Why is it, you've got a sense like, why is this continuing to happen for me? I would say when you're realizing that there are patterns in your life, and everyone has patterns are a really common part. In fact, one of the ways I think about my job is I look for patterns. Think about long-term therapy. Now, long-term therapy, people get scared of because they're like, oh, I don't want to do it long-term. I just kind of want quick and easy fixes. And that makes a lot of sense. But when you think about it, long-term therapy is not something that has to go for you forever. We're talking about something that at least becomes what I would say is a practice. When talking about long-term therapy, we're talking about something that you engage in a regular interval, like a regular cadence, and you do without necessarily an end date in mind. Then if you're talking about like the grief and loss, I mean, there you might actually be thinking about doing something a little bit more targeted. So you might not say necessarily long-term therapy, you might not say short-term therapy, you might be looking at something a bit more midterm. And again, there's no like definite figures on how long this takes, but you know, it could be like somewhere between 6 to 12 months is like a midterm type of therapy. And there you're looking to really talk about one thing in particular, like a loss of something or grief or something. You might find that it mutates, morphs into something else that you want to talk about, and then you might really appreciate the relationship with the therapist. You might go long term. but I'd say something like midterm is usually good there. And then when you're talking about these particular situations that are environmental triggers or stresses or something like that that you really want to work through, you might think about some short-term work, like an exam you have, or there's a job that you're applying for that you really want to get, or there's a particular breakdown in a relationship or something like that that you just really want to work through and understand that one specifically. Or, you know, it might be that you've got this real life situation that's coming up that you know is coming up that you want to just figure out how to work through. And that's maybe a short-term approach where you're going to look for skills and strategies and see if you can work through that way. I'll just go through a couple of the types of therapies that you see in long-term and short-term.
Yeah, that would be great, because I think when people would go to look up at certain psychologists, and I know I've done this before, and you're like, oh, which is the best fit for me? And they'll have things like CBT or, you know, DBT or like EFT. And you're like, I don't know what any of this means. So,
why are there so many acronyms?
Yeah, there's all these. Like, I'm like, what are they? Can you explain what they are?
Yeah, well, okay. I'd say let's start off with like the long-term or more long-term approaches. You're looking at things like psychoanalytic or psychodynamic approaches to therapy. They're more like approaches to therapy that are actually more the foundation of psychology and psychiatry to begin with. And they're really types of therapies that look more at the whole person, the holistic approach, looking at your soul, at your experience of life, at your meaning, what you find meaningful, at your direction in life, at your mind in its fullest. So psyche in that kind of frame is actually understood to be the soul. P-S-Y-C-H-E is the soul. And so what you're really trying to do is understand the whole person.
Is that where Freud...
That's where Freud
is. That's where Freud is.
Freud is the father of psychoanalysis.
Yes, okay.
So that was all Freud and then Jung. Then if you're looking more at solution-focused therapies, these are the more newer age kind of therapies, more modern, I'd say like, you know, 50s, 60s, that kind of thing. And you're looking at CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy, ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy. These types of therapies love skills.
Yeah. What does that look like? I know it's probably, you know, quite deep to go into, but what does like CBT look like?
Okay, well, it's going to start off with, like a lot of therapies start off with, really just getting to know you, getting to know why you're there, what brought you in, what are the main reasons you come to therapy and what are you hoping to get out of it, that kind of thing. And, you know, if there's any kind of particular, especially in like the CBT, DBT approaches, if there's any particular like issues that you're experiencing over and over again, like a depression, anxiety, you know, common ones. And then after a few sessions, you're really going to start going into some skill work. So cognitive behavioral therapy, just as an example, is like one of the more common ones, especially when you're studying. I mean, it's very common in a study perspective. But you'll start looking at your thoughts and your feelings and your behaviors and how they're all connected and seeing if we can target some particular thoughts, some underlying beliefs that might be contributing to the reason that you came into therapy. So that's CBT. Do you want me to go into the others? I mean, there's a lot.
There's probably a lot.
There's so much we could talk
about. Maybe just the main popular ones.
Okay, so I'll give it to you in a nutshell. I might butcher this, so I really hope no psychologist out there is listening to me and going to like directly quote me and say he got it wrong. But I'm trying to do something that is obviously quite difficult because these therapies are really detailed and nuanced and there's so much complexity in them. I'm trying to give it to you in a few sentences, so here we go. Acceptance and commitment therapy, as the name suggests, it's about accepting the issues you have in your life because you can't change things until you accept them. You need to see the problem before you can change it fully. And then committing to new ways of living. That's acceptance and commitment therapy. Dialectical behavioral therapy. So I actually spent a lot of time with this one in my past. Dialectics is all about how you see the world, how we often see the world in opposites, day, night, black, white, good, bad, right, wrong. And when we see the world in opposites, we often get stuck because things aren't just one or the other. Dialectical behavioral therapy is about seeing if we can find a synthesis between opposites and use that, like nuance and complexity, to guide our behavior. So CBT, ACT, DBT, I mean, they're the more common ones.
Yep. And what about emotion-focused?
Emotion-focused therapy. So emotion-focused therapy, it's kind of self-explanatory in the sense that you're really looking to understand and deepen your emotional experience and then be able to work with your emotional experience so that emotions aren't causing you too much pain and suffering in your life, but you're rather able to use them to your benefit.
What about if you're someone who has experienced a traumatic event in the past? Something that I worked through was EMDR with my psych. I was in a really traumatic car accident when I was younger, and that was something that we did together. And I at first thought, like, what the fuck is this?
Do you want to tell everyone what you're actually doing it? Because it's a bit wild, isn't it?
It's so interesting. It's basically like your psych will hold up two fingers and move their fingers to left to right, left to right, and you follow the fingers whilst reliving the memory.
Yes.
And it's all about rewiring the brain, right? It's about reassociating traumatic experiences in the brain and creating new neural pathways. And I have to say, it really does work.
Yeah.
Is that how you would explain it as well, EMDR? Yeah.
I think you did a great job. And probably a lot of your listeners have listened to, heard of, read the book, The Body Keeps the Score,
yes.
Bessel van der Kolk. So that's you know, huge book, hugely influential. And he loves EMDR. He thinks EMDR is fantastic. And he says, you know, there's so much evidence now on EMDR saying how wonderful it is for, particularly for trauma, PTSD. Mm. For being able to rewire our experiences or the way we experience the past.
Yeah.
So, yeah, something happens in the brain where your brain's able to, as you're retelling it, rewire. And essentially what you're doing is you're confronting it in a way, aren't you? In a way that's a little bit safe and a little bit guided. And in doing that, you're able to re-experience it in a healthy way. So that's kind of the idea of EMDR. And yeah, it's very good for more traumatic or particular events that you want to work through, I think.
Yeah, because I think for a lot of people, when you have experienced something traumatic, it is hard to go back, right? Like Jared said, it's worth doing that with a professional in a safe space. Otherwise, sometimes I think if you relive traumatic experiences and even cause more trauma.
You know, this idea of trauma, I just want to touch on it very quickly. People think that a lot of the time, I think in order to deal with a trauma, you need to like go and deal with that trauma and you need to go and speak to the therapist about that trauma. And that is something to do, definitely. But I just want to highlight that, you know, and I think, you know, really going into trauma, I've sort of explored this a lot, that everyone has trauma in their lives. Trauma is something that is ubiquitous. And, you know, the first trauma that a lot of people experience might even be something like realizing that the people you thought who could protect you from everything, who got everything right, your parents, can't. That is traumatic because all of a sudden your whole frame of security, your whole frame of safety has been shattered because you realize, shit, these people actually can't do what I thought they could. Now, that's a trauma. On some level, that is a trauma because your trauma is this shattering of the world of safety that you thought you had. So everyone goes through them in different ways. And that's why I would say, yes, it's important to go and seek out therapy for a particular trauma. And at the same time, you will find, I think, in your other therapies, also your psychodynamic, psychoanalytic therapies as well, that you're going to be exploring, not maybe overtly saying, oh, this was a trauma, but you're going to be working through traumas. Sorry.
No, I love that. That's great. That is great. Because I feel like there has been a huge movement in that space, right, with the holistic psychologist, Dr. Nicola Piera, where she works a lot in that space of just like, just because it's not quote unquote this big traumatic event doesn't mean that your parents' lack of emotional response or, you know, certain dynamics you've experienced in your family, whether that's codependence or whatever it is, doesn't act as a traumatic experience for you. And like your experience of something being traumatic, there isn't a scale, right? Like it's like you could feel a trauma as like a 10, even though someone might have experienced like something way more traumatic and experience it as like a 6.
Yeah.
What kind of professionals are you looking for in therapy? Because obviously there's so many, right?
Yeah,
like I just went for the classic psychologist, the clinical psych, but you know, there's counselors, there's therapists, like who should people be looking for?
Okay. So this is a bit involved. So obviously I'm a psychologist, so I'm probably a lot more qualified to talk about psychologists, not as qualified to talk about counselors and psychotherapists, but I can tell you this. I can tell you that the reason there's a difference between these titles is the title of a psychologist, and I'll go into this a bit more, but it's a protected title, which means that you have to do a certain amount of study and under certain institutions in order to become a psychologist. Once you become a psychologist, then you can specialize as a psychologist. So you can be a sports psychologist doing sports psychology, essentially. Organizational psychology, which works with businesses. Clinical psychology, which is more like prevalent things like depression, anxiety, etc. And a general psychologist, which is also dealing with that kind of stuff. But I suppose clinical psychology, the difference is you have more training in the diagnostic criteria. There's also a difference from a general psychologist and clinical psychologist perspective in terms of rebate, Medicare rebate. So we're talking about like how much you get back from the government when you see someone. So at this point, I think it is that a general psychologist, you get back $96, and a clinical psychologist, you get back $140. People might change their fees depending on that. So like a clinical psychologist might charge a bit more than a general psychologist, which means that you're really just paying the same amount, or they might charge the same, in which case you might prefer to see a clinical psychologist because you get more back. There's a lot of judgment out there. Which one's better? Who's better? Who's the best? I don't know. And honestly, you get really good and bad in both. And that's life. In terms of counselors and psychotherapists, I don't really know, but I just know that that title isn't as protected as psychologists.
What about therapists? Because you see a lot of therapists online,
same,
right?
Same thing, I think. Same thing. So therapists are people that probably have done, they've done study. I say probably because I don't know. I don't know if they have done study. I'm sure there is. Wait, that sounds really bad.
No, but I would say, though, definitely do your research.
Yes.
Because especially now on social media and TikTok, and there's a lot of people who are like, yep, I'm a therapist or a coach. Yeah. But go and look at what they have studied or what their qualifications are. Mm. Because sometimes I've looked it up and they've been something very small or it's misguided.
Yes.
You think
you
that
could
there
do
are
like a 3-month course,
yes,
and say I'm
a therapist.
I'm
so
a
definitely do the research, I would say, behind whoever it is that you're looking into.
Yes.
You mentioned, Jared, the rebates. How would people go about starting a session with a psychologist? I had to go to my GP.
Yes.
I had to get a referral.
Yes.
So basically I sat down and I said, I'm struggling with this traumatic experience in my past. I have never worked through it and I want to work through it and unpack it. And they were like, yep, let's put you down for anxiety, blah, blah, blah. Wrote me up a referral and I got 10 rebated sessions. This is in Australia through Medicare.
Yeah.
So is that the process that people listening should go through?
Yeah. I should also say we could also talk about psychiatrists as well. Psychiatrists, you know, they offer medication, have the option for medication. And some psychiatrists don't actually even dabble in medication. They just do therapy. And then there's a whole other Medicare structure because you can see a psychiatrist for more than 10 sessions. They often charge more, but you also, once you hit a safety net in Medicare, then it actually becomes quite affordable to see a psychiatrist. So it's an initial outlay, but of probably around $2,000 effectively that you have to spend initially to get all the benefits of the rebate. We still get 50%, I think, on that $2,000, but eventually actually can become quite affordable. Going back to your question, yes, in order to see a psychologist and even a psychiatrist, you don't have to get a referral to see a psychiatrist because they're a doctor. But to see a psychologist, you need a referral from a GP if you want to get the Medicare rebate. You don't have to. If you go, I don't care about the Medicare rebate, I don't want to, I want to find someone first and do it that way, then you can look up someone. If you see a GP, you'll get 6 sessions initially, and then you'll see a psychologist for 6 sessions, and they'll write a letter to your GP telling them what's happening, and then you'll go back to the GP, you need to get another 4 sessions, and that's every year. So every year it starts again. If you didn't use the 10 in the previous year, it doesn't carry over. You just start again with another 10. That's individual therapy. But also you get 10 group therapy rebates, which people don't use.
Hey, Dee here. I'm just in the edit. And I want to quickly add that on top of this about looking for cheaper alternatives with psychs and therapy, if you see a provisional psych, they're the psychologists who are just starting out, they are a lot cheaper than going and seeing a psychologist or a clinical psych. Also, like Jared noted, group therapy can be a lot cheaper. And there are some psychologists out there who do bulk bill. They are hard to find, but there's definitely spaces and therapies you can find that might be cheaper options for you other than just using that Medicare rebate.
So many people don't really know about this.
Can we talk about group therapy? Because this is something that you work in this space.
Yes.
Obviously, we've unpacked different types of therapy. What does group therapy look like? And what kind of issues might you be dealing with in your life that might lead you to looking into doing group therapy over just individual therapy?
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, if you're asking me, I dabble in it. And I would say group therapy is for everyone. And the government offers 10 Medicare rebated group therapy sessions, I think, for a reason. But it's very underutilized. A lot of people don't even know you get 10 group sessions. There's a few different types of groups. And then I think depending on what you're looking for, it might help identify which type of group is good for you. So like the first type of group is probably more a psycho-educational group. This is, again, like more that skills-based kind of work. You're going to learn skills. You're going to talk about how they were. They're going to be for particular things, whether it be like anxiety or depression or even like BPD or bipolar or emotions or distress tolerance or things like that. You might even find that there's like something we're thinking of starting is a transitioning fathers group or a bullying group that's all about skills and how to work with these life phases.
So each group therapy might have a specific theme?
Target, but they're often based on those types of therapies that we spoke about, CBT, ACT, DBT, they're often based on that, those skills-based, what I would call psychoeducational groups.
And you sit together and then how does it work?
Sit together and the group therapist or the facilitator might talk about, you obviously like speak with each other, introduce yourselves, blah, blah, blah. And then the group therapist might talk about like a particular thing that's happening that you can all resonate with, the reason you're in the group, and then offer a skill for you to kind of think about and work through or psychological tools and skills. And then you'll go away and you'll use it. You'll come back in the next week and you'll talk about how that was and how you found it. And then you'll go through some more. So by the end of the 10 to 12 weeks, usually these things go for, you've got this whole range of skills and tools, psychological tools to use in your life. And it's much cheaper than individual therapy, especially, and it's also probably a bit more confronting because it's like you're with other people and all of a sudden
you almost have to own what you...
Yeah.
You have to be really vulnerable and own it, right? You're not kind of just like being seen by one person. You're being seen by a group of people.
Yeah. There's one type of therapy in this group space we haven't spoken about and I really want to sort of get to. So maybe I'm hurrying along, but So I've spoken about groups, but I haven't spoken about, like, for me, currently where I'm sitting, I'm sure there'll be other things as I go on in my career, but for me, this is like the best type of group therapy you can do. Well, it's the most challenging, but I think it's unbelievable. And it's called the interpersonal process group. So the interpersonal process group, it's not a psychoeducational group. It's not a tools-based thing, but it takes a particular frame when it comes to therapy. And the idea is that we're not walking diagnostic categories. We're not people walking around being like ADHD, anxiety, depression, BPD, narcissism, whatever. It's a medical way of seeing people. And whilst, you know, that's very beneficial for us to heal and work through things, it also, there's something about it when I say it to you, I'm sure you can hear it, like it's lacking the fact that you're a human being, you know. And interpersonal process groups are really trying to bring that to the fore, that you don't exist in a vacuum. You don't exist as this world unto yourself, myself, myself, myself. I need to diagnose myself so I can heal myself, blah, 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 blah. It's like you're missing the fact that we are a species of humans. We work together. We live together. We live in cities, in societies, as groups of people. This is like community. So the interpersonal process group is about thinking about your suffering, not because you are a problem or you need to fix you, but because of the way that you relate to and the way that the world and you interact. So it's not that it's a problem with you, it's a problem. There's something going on in the interaction. And the interpersonal process group is about seeing the interactions between people. and how different people interact with different people, and saying that the suffering or your mood or your experience is dependent on the types of relationships you're having. And so what it's saying is that we exist with other people, and if we can work through how we exist with other people, then we can work through the suffering.
I feel like that's something that is really prominent in the book, The Courage to be Disliked.
Oh, yeah.
Have you read that?
I haven't.
What's the other book I'm thinking of? Johan Hari does a really, really good book about this called Lost Connections. Definitely recommend. I'll put it in the show notes for anyone listening. It's very about that. Mm. Like, you are not, it's not your fault for being so depressed, or it's not your fault for being so anxious. You live in a world that makes you this way. Definitely, you know, obviously people in this space can disagree, but it's, I think it's a really interesting perspective. And I think that group therapy talks to that. What about if you are in a couple or relationship and you want to work through like issues or things that are coming up with your partner?
Yeah.
What's the best?
Well, couples therapy obviously stands out there. And like, you know, you both got to be on board for it. And couples therapy doesn't have to be if you've got a problem. It can be if you're trying to get something out of your relationship that you feel like you guys, you know, the couple really want to work through or really want to find as part of their relationship, or you're making these big decisions together and you want to talk it out. It can be a way to just almost maintain and sustain your relationship.
If you've never done therapy before, sometimes it's really hard to know who is a good therapist or a professional. If you have no one to compare them to, right, it's like, oh, I've signed up, I've gone to all this effort, I may as well just stick with them out. What should you look out for seeing a psych or someone for the first time?
Yeah, well, people think about it in different ways, and I'm not sure which one's right, which one's wrong. I don't think there is, but I think there's just different ways to think about it. Some people like to find people that have experienced what they've experienced, you know, and I get that. I do get that. The way I say that sounds like I'm going to say something, but I get it. That, you know, like, it can feel very comfortable. It can feel like, okay, I want to know that this person's experienced it, because then I can really trust what they're going through or what they're saying. And other people might try and find someone that really challenges them, the kind of person they wouldn't normally see, because that actually is where they feel or recognize they need to do some work. And someone that doesn't understand their experience might actually be really useful, because then you're coming from two totally different world views. That is where you can build something greater. There's not a right or a wrong, but it's important to think about, your therapist is going to not only be this like safe and secure person, but hopefully someone that's going to challenge you and confronting, and someone that you are going to feel really average about. The funny thing as a therapist is that if you get terrible Google reviews, that's almost better than getting great Google reviews.
Really?
Totally. You don't want, like, if you're getting great Google reviews, something is lacking in the therapy. Because your job as a therapist is not to be the person that everyone likes. In fact, sometimes you need to be the person that the client or the patient doesn't like, so that they can work through the thing that's hard and challenging. If you're getting great Google reviews and that's it, then there's something problematic about the therapy that you're doing. Now, of course, I'm not here to judge someone that's got great Google reviews out there and say they're being a terrible therapist. No, I'm just saying, think about that carefully. You know, there's a quote in Batman I love, the Dark Knight film. You either die the hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And I think it's beautiful, because as a therapist, you do, obviously you need to create a space that's safe and secure. But if you're not doing anything that's challenging and confronting, then what was the point of the development or building that safe and secure space to do therapy, to do some kind of healing? So, in fact, I think that the best work that I do is when a client leaves me and goes, that was okay. That was okay, because, and they might forget my name. Hopefully they do, because I'm not someone that's super important to them. I'm not someone that they need in their lives, but someone that gave them an experience of working through something that they've actually now, they're so kind of healed from it, so to speak, that it's not even registering for them.
That's such an interesting perspective, because I've seen so many people in my life start that journey of going to see a psychologist, go to one session and then go, I really didn't like them, and then never go again.
Yeah.
But I know that that can be a really real experience, right? Like, you can have a really shit psychologist sometimes. Like, yes. Sometimes I hear about what they've said or done. Like, I had a friend whose site called them a narcissist on the day one, and she, you know, I'm like, that to me, like, I know, I think there's a lot of value in having someone who challenges you. I really like that my site does that. She'll point out stuff that I do that's not healthy in relationships and whatever it is, and I love that. But how, yeah, what if you don't like your therapist, and how to know if it's not a good psych?
Well, look, it's all a balancing act, isn't it? And life is a balancing act, and so is, you know, working through something with a therapist. You want someone that's going to not just challenge you so everything's entirely overwhelming, because then you actually can't achieve anything. If it's too overwhelming, your body's shutting down, your mind's in overdrive, and you're not actually learning anything or changing in any kind of development, you're just getting re-traumatized. So you want to be able to have a balance of safety and challenge at the same time. And that's life, really. Like, you know, we want to find safety so we can grow and develop. And so I think there's a mix. Firstly, I would say if you're having issues with your therapist, first place to do is definitely speak to them about it. If they're welcoming the conversation, if they're open to the conversation, usually that's a good sign. If they're shutting you down then and they're making you feel worse for bringing that, that's probably not a good sign. So I would say that it's, again, it is really a balancing act, but it's also important to know that you can leave a therapist, and sometimes leaving a therapist is actually the most empowering thing you can do.
Just quickly before we wrap up, what can people expect after starting therapy? Because I really want to paint a realistic picture, because it was pretty full on for me. It brought up so much stuff.
Yeah.
It caused relationship problems. I needed distance from people. There was a lot of anger and sadness, and because I'd never touched the stuff that I needed to work through.
Yeah, totally.
And so when you have all these like realizations about certain patterns, and like you said, aha moments about your parents that they weren't perfect or safe or whatever it is, so much can come up. So yeah, what advice would you give for people, what they can expect after starting?
Well, I think that was great what you said. I think, you know, that you gave a good picture of something or things that can happen. Something really interesting, when someone comes back to me after the first session and I say, how was the first session? And they go, it was awesome. It was great. I felt really good. I go, that's really good. But let's remember now that you're going to feel really average here as well. And you're going to actually really not want to come back at some point. And so when that happens, let's remember that you felt good. And when you're feeling good, let's remember that it's not going to feel good. So I think it's really important to be aware that through the process of therapy is it's the ups and downs. It's about experiencing them with the person, whether it's amazing, whether it's terrible. It's about coming back into the therapeutic relationship and experiencing it with the therapist and working through it with that safe and secure therapeutic alliance. There are things that are going to happen in your life and they're going to change. And it's about working through, how's the therapy actually contributing to that? Or is it not helping with that in any way? Is it about thinking about like maybe some adjustment in therapy to kind of then work through what's happening outside of the therapy? But remember that what you work through in therapy is there for you to take with you in your life. So when you talk about confronting situations outside of your life in therapy, and then you go and confront them, shit's going to happen and it's going to get real. And that's where change and development happens. So I think, it's really important to be aware of therapy's not always a great experience. And that's the point.
And sometimes that might mean people will be like, I don't want, you know I don't, I actually don't want to unpack this. But it is one of, like, to me, the most rewarding experiences I've ever done. I know everyone will have a different experience, but I think there is something so incredible about learning about yourself and unpacking what makes you and the influences on your life and kind of delving into your psyche, I think, to me, has been one of the most rewarding things I've done.
So good to hear. Because I guess it's not going to be rewarding if it's not some way difficult.
Exactly.
And maybe that's one of the issues with the wellness industry. Like, wellness is seen as like the goal, and, you know, it's all candles and beautiful and smells good and looks great and whatever. But there's something that we need to consider in therapy that is about actually some difficulty.
You're not bawling your eyes out on the screen to a therapist during COVID. You're not doing self-care right. Jared, thank you so much. This has been, I know, like, you know, we've only had 40 something minutes, but there's obviously so much more that we could have covered.
Yeah.
So I just want to like put that out there as well, that this is a really big, big topic. There's obviously lots of different types of therapy. People might be like, oh, what about hypnotherapy? And what about this and sex therapy? And, you know, there's heaps. But I think, yeah, as a clinical psych, we've kind of really touched on the basics of what you need to know. But please, you know, DM us always at Triple J The Hookup and let us know if there's something else you want us to delve into with Jared or something deeper in therapy that you want us to unpack. But Jared, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Great topic.